Coming up today on the Steve Hallstrom Show, the North Dakota State Legislature gets a new member from Fargo. We'll tell you all about that. Also today on the show, a West Fargo man wants a new trial and says he was not guilty of murdering his wife. And nearly 200 employees at the Fargo's Case IH facility will have a new outlook on their careers after learning that their jobs are coming to an end. Good afternoon, my friend. Steve Hallstrom joining you with you here. I'm glad to have you joining me on the Steve Hallstrom Show on this Friday afternoon, March 7th, 2025. We're already 1 week through March. Can you believe all of that? I'm glad that you're here with me because there's a lot of ground to cover today. Typically on Fridays, we don't have a lot of guest traffic, but you know how these things go. Every once in a while, it all works out. We've got three guests today coming up on the show. At 4:40 today, we're going to be joined by Missy Heilman. She's the founder and CEO of BioGirls. This is an organization that I am a big fan of and have supported in the past. I love what they do. And they get involved with our young ladies at a time during their lives when they are susceptible to a whole lot of things and emotional pressures. And the statistics about the number of girls that make suicide plans are absolutely staggering. I've talked about it many times here on this program. And so every once in a while, I like to invite Missy to come in and give our audience an opportunity to hear what they have been doing. So she's going to do that today at about 4:40. If you have daughters or if you have granddaughters, great-granddaughters, you will want to miss this. It's always very good conversation with Missy. I'm thankful she can come in today. Julie Fedorchuk will be with us today at 5:20, North Dakota's congresswoman. After you remember, we don't have a Kelly Armstrong congressman anymore. It's Julie Fedorchuk, North Dakota congresswoman. She's been down at the southern border today, visiting with Border Patrol agents, checking out the scene firsthand down there. She says she's learned a few things, and she wants to share that with us here today, so we'll do that at 5:20. And then at 5:30 today, Raheem Williams, economist and researcher, will be joining us today, and we're going to talk about the federal jobs report that came out earlier today. Depending on what you want to see, I think you can tell yourself about five different narratives out of this jobs number that came out today. And we're going to find out from Raheem what his take on this is. I've got a couple thoughts myself that we'll pass along as we go through the program today. 701-271-1100 is our phone number. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. And you can get an appointment there by picking up the phone and calling them. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment, get in soon at valleychristian.co. The Steve Hallstrom Studio is built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it and go to pccnd.com to learn more. Had an absolute blast last night watching the Moorhead Spuds come from behind to win in the Minnesota State Hockey Tournament. 7-4 was the final there. Now they're taking on Edina, who everybody just jumps in to hate this time of year. Because Edina being, you know, that kind of private school that, not that private school, but that well-to-do area. They're always good at hockey, and because of it, everybody wants to take them down. So the Spuds will have that opportunity today. Hopefully they start a little faster than they did yesterday. But boy, do they look good in that third period. Wow, they just absolutely took that game over. So go Spuds tonight. If you are so inclined, I will be over on our sister station, WDAY, with the pregame show right around 8 o'clock tonight. That game will face off sometime between 8:20 and 8:30, most likely, unless we have double overtime in the early semifinal, which starts at 6. We'll see how that goes. Fun time of year. There's some college basketball, high school basketball tournaments going on, too. So Bison basketball teams in action. Last score I saw in the Bison women, they were down 10 to nothing. So hopefully they can reverse that here as the day goes on. That was the 3-seed NDSU against the 6-seed Kansas City. So go Bison on that one. The men, I believe, play tomorrow in Sioux Falls. All right, let's get to it. The 4 o'clock wrap. Semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire to catch you up on what's been a very busy and eventful day. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap. We start with the almanac. Today is March 7th, 2025. Average high for this day is 31. Average low is 13. 34 has been our high so far today, so we're about average for this day. Record high 64 back in 2016. Record low minus 22 in 1883. They're talking about potentially 60s here in the metro on Monday, but as the day has gone on, they've been increasing the potential for some high winds on Monday, which would kind of take all the fun out of a really nice day. And I am hearing some rumblings that next weekend we could get hit with a major March blizzard, which is not all that uncommon. Now, typically we'll get a good one most years. Didn't last year, but we might get a doozy. I'm hearing 12 to 18 inches in some of the early forecasts is not quite exactly the right word, but the possibilities that people are saying. It could be a could pack a punch. I love a good blizzard. I don't need, you know, the high winds and the cold weather and all that. But when you get one in March, usually the snow melts fairly quickly. We'll take that. Sunrise this morning was at 6:54. Sunset will be at 6:21. And on Sunday, reminder, set your clocks ahead. Enjoy daylight savings time while we still have it. The state legislature looks like they want to take it away. The Senate is our last. Well, I guess we got Kelly Armstrong, who could be our last hope on this one. But I don't know what the House was doing. They passed it like by 20 votes to get rid of daylight savings time. What a mess that would be. Can you imagine living next to Moorhead and going back and forth, and it's one time zone and one place and another and another? No thanks. Sunday, shift those clocks ahead. We will gain about 3 minutes and 21 seconds of daylight today. Markets, yeah, that's been an interesting ride this week, hasn't it? What a roller coaster it's been. Dow Jones Industrial Average finished up 222 points today at 42,801. S&P 500 up 31, NASDAQ up 126. So it's been a good day in the markets. The stock market liked the jobs report today. It didn't show a ridiculous amount of it didn't show a ridiculous amount of layoffs or highly unexpected job creation numbers, but the unemployment rate did tick up. And traders on Wall Street today, the word is they saw that today and thought, well, there's a case now where the Federal Reserve may have to lower interest rates because of the job picture in this country, which if they fire as many federal workers as they talk like they're going to, there will be a definite, I don't know if seismic shift is the right word, but there will be a definite shift going on with the job market. And you're going to hear from Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent on this today on this program. And there could be some very interesting things happening as we have employees by the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, moving from the public sector to the private sector. So we'll talk about all of those things coming up here today. But basically, that's what people were talking about with the jobs numbers today. All right, AAA says the average price of a gallon of... Oh, I got to give you the... hang on, I'm getting excited here about talking about jobs numbers. I've got to make sure, though, that I'm giving you the gold prices. So I fast-forwarded here, and I just got to go back a page. So let's do this. Here we go. All right, so back to our commodities. Oh, WTI crude oil, basically unchanged today, $67.05 a barrel. Gold today down $8 an ounce. Silver down 42 cents. Not too much there. And even after the president today officially established the U.S. Bitcoin reserve, Bitcoin today fell by about $3,000 to $85,887. I'm itchy to buy a little Bitcoin. I'm going to be honest with you about that. I feel like it's time. I think it's going higher. I just do. Gold traders, the most conservative people in the world, are telling me to buy some cryptocurrencies. So I don't know. I got to figure out how to do that. I don't have the money laying around. That is the problem. It's all tied up in other things. AAA says the average price of a gallon. How about you? Are you interested right now? 271-1100 if you are. If you're thinking about it, but you're like, I just don't have the stomach for it, I'd love to hear from you about that today too. But I'm tempted. I feel like it's moving higher. There's way too many people that are getting behind it. If the U.S. mounts this kind of strategic Bitcoin reserve, you know that other countries around the world are going to do the same thing. Some of them already are. And there's only a certain number of these things out there. I don't know. I just feel like it's going somewhere. AAA average gas, $3.10 a gallon, down a penny from yesterday. North Dakota's average price, $3.03. Minnesota $3.04, South Dakota $2.99. I saw it for $2.74 today. All right, news stories today, things that you got to know. There's a whole bunch of them. Holy smokes, do we have stories today. All right, we're going to begin with a new state representative for Southwest Fargo, Horace and Oxbow. The Republican Party of North Dakota and the District 27 Committee has voted to appoint Timothy Brown Jr. to succeed the late State Representative Josh Christie, who passed away last month at age 43. Brown will serve the rest of Christie's term, which ends in December of 2026. He sounds like our kind of guy. He's a former Army medic who serves in law enforcement, runs the virtual shooting range called The Range, and also has a business called Tea Party Solutions. What's not to like? A firearms training company. Also does a podcast as well. So sounds like a fascinating guy. We got to get him on the show, but he is going to fill in for State Representative Christie, the late State Representative Josh Christie. A West Fargo man convicted of killing his wife, reports WDAY Radio Now, is appealing his sentence to the North Dakota Supreme Court. You may remember Spencer Moen in December was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole in the beating death of his wife, Sonia, which happened, prosecutors tell us, in front of the children, leaving her in a bathtub to die. But he's no quitter, this guy, and he says there was insufficient evidence to sustain a conviction, and he's filed an appeal. Says the case did not prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt, so we'll see where that goes. Nearly 200 employees with hourly positions at Fargo's Case IH facility are seeing their jobs come to an end after the parent company announced workforce reductions. A spokesperson for CNH tells WDAY Radio News that the employees were notified earlier this week. The company says current and anticipated market conditions, the reason for the workforce reductions. WDAY Radio also reporting that North Dakota's Emergency Service Department says all these dry conditions are making it look like an earlier and longer spring fire season in the state. I guess that's not all that unexpected. There's parts of western North Dakota that are very, very dry. It's dry here. I think it's dry kind of everywhere, but some places it's really tough. Valley News Live reports that the North Dakota House has voted down an opportunity to raise the minimum wage. It went down 79 to 11. This is the bill that was raised by the Fargo state representative, the Democrat from Fargo, who wanted to go to $9.25 an hour. The minimum wage right now is $7.25, which mirrors the federal number. Basically, the House just killed it. Dan Ruby, representative from Minot, says this has never been a good idea. We could take it to zero, and people would still be making these higher averages than this bill would do. So I don't know how you feel about minimum wage. We haven't talked about it a lot on this show. Who's making minimum wage, honestly? If you're making a minimum wage and you're going to work and doing a good job, you're doing it wrong. So I just don't think that anybody does. If you're paying a minimum wage, you're going to lose every employee you have. Fox News reports today that President Trump says he's going to cut more than $400 million in federal grants to Columbia University over anti-Semitism concerns. They've had more protests. Like, why are they still protesting this Hamas-Israel thing? The slash funding, says Fox News, comes amid a review of more than $5 billion in federal grant commitments going to Columbia. Here's my question. Why is the federal government giving grant money to Columbia, a private university? Maybe there's more of this going on than I realize, but isn't the point of a private university you can do your own thing, you don't have to comply with federal law because you don't get the federal money? So I don't know. I mean, I'm glad we're taking a look at this. I don't know anything about the anti-Semitism on campus, although they seem to want to protest all the time there. President now getting tough on them. President Trump also said today, reports the Star Tribune, that he has not considered pardoning former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd. Trump addressed the topic today inside the Oval Office in a short press briefing after Ben Shapiro floated the idea earlier this week and said Trump should acquit him. And Trump said, I have not even heard about that one. Haven't heard really about that too much at all. So... Trump just says it's not on my radar right now. We'll see if something happens there. If he has 20 minutes with Liz Collins sometime, in that amount of time, I think she'll convince him that's the way to go. She's very, she's got her ducks in a row on this one. The president, as I mentioned, also today signed an executive order to establish a government Bitcoin reserve. This is kind of the journey toward mainstream acceptance, you could say, for cryptocurrencies. Under the new order, the U.S. government will retain about 200,000 in Bitcoin that it has seized in criminal and civil proceedings. So they're not going to sell any of this to raise money. They're going to keep it in a Bitcoin reserve. So very interesting there. And federal jobs report came out today showing that there was about 151,000 jobs created in the month of February. Most of the jobs were in healthcare and social assistance, 63,000 jobs. Second most created financial activities, third construction, fourth transportation and warehousing. Notice what you haven't heard yet? Government jobs, which have always been like one or two. Things are changing, my friend. Government is actually fifth on the list with 11,000 government jobs created. I bet when we get into March and we start really seeing some of these federal either layoffs or firings, whatever, take hold, there's going to be probably a negative number there. The problem is you got states like Minnesota who say, hey, we're going to do a new program. We're going to hire 400 people. Isn't that great? So the states still are hiring people. So that's a look at some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Friday afternoon. When we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show, it's time for the Daily Dose of Doge. And the new federal Treasury Secretary says, you don't realize how big the federal spending problem is. I got some numbers for you. Well, actually, Scott Bessent has those numbers, and he'll tell them directly to you coming up next. I have 2 1-minute sound bites that I'd like to play for you. This came from an event yesterday that was held by the New York Economy Club. Yeah, you got to really need some social activity to join. No, actually, that would be something I would probably enjoy doing, which tells you how lame my social life is. But Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent was there yesterday, and they get together and talk about how the economy is in the U.S., which seems really dry and boring and bland. I get all that, but it's really talking about how money moves around and how much money is available in the country. So to me, I find this stuff really interesting. I've got 2 1-minute cuts I want to play for you, and these both illustrate how big the government has gotten. And the first one is the Treasury Secretary Bessent talking to Larry Kudlow. And Kudlow asked him, Scott, how do you try to explain it in simple terms that people can understand about how big the government is and how far out of control it's gotten? And this is what he had to say.
25% of U.S. GDP flows through Area Code 202.
Okay, Area Code 202 is Washington, D.C. Did you get that? 25%. The GDP is a sum total of the goods and services produced in the United States. And you wouldn't think that there would be that much goods produced in the Washington, D.C. area, but it just goes to show you that how much of it is rooted somehow, some way to the federal government.
Everybody is trying to, like, there are all these markers on that. Same thing. You know, Americans with health care, every Monday is paying for your health care. Mm. But when you think about 25% of GDP flowing through Area Code 202, everybody's trying to skim a portion of it, trying to reallocate it. I don't know what the savings level can be, but I think examining a lot of these contracts, a lot of this employment, and I was with Glenn Youngkin, governor of Virginia, the other day, and I thought he would, all these people are in a state over government layoffs, and so his Northern Virginia would probably be the area most affected. And I said, Governor, how are you handling this? How are you messaging it? And he said, we have 350,000 private sector jobs available in Virginia. Mm. My office has a portal up, and anyone can go on the portal and come and join us in the private sector.
Okay. Second comment he made Isn't that interesting? 350,000 private sector jobs. Well, there's opportunity for many of these people to find a new place to work. The second thing he talked about was this whole concept of how to shrink the government without killing the economy. And it's tricky, Bessent says, to try to shrink the government in a big way when this nation's economic system has become so reliant on big government spending.
That as we bring down this spending, and we're not going to do it all at once, I'm not in the habit of repeating private conversations, but I will tell you, first time I went in to see President Trump talk about getting involved with a campaign, he looked at me and said, Scott, how are we going to get this debt and deficit down without killing the economy?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking nonstop about that for the past 15, 18 months now. And I really do think it's this transition from public to private that will bring down or will deleverage the government.
Mm-hmm.
And as I talked about, that's why I wanted to lead with it today to this group, that we will re-leverage the private sector. And part of the key to re-leveraging the private sector is cutting regulation, making the tax policy permanent, and getting our regulated banking system going again.
Okay, so there's a lot there, especially in that last couple. When he talks about re-leveraging the private sector, he's talking about freeing the private sector up to take on some of the GDP that the federal government has been doing in the past. So regulation is a big part of that. You heard him talk about that. And then lowering taxes as well. When you do that, you stimulate economic activity. And it's happened every time they've had major tax cuts that the federal revenues go up. Rates go down. Activity gets generated. You get more activity, more people buying and selling things. And so you get more money coming to the federal government. I'll have to study up on the banking sector and how that gets involved as well. But I thought those were a couple of interesting comments from Bessent. It ties into the Doge story that we've been talking about and cutting all that stuff. And you hear Bessent talking about we've got to ignite the private sector again, find a way to do that. And when we give these jobs reports like I gave to you today, you've heard me over the last more than 5 months, back basically the last 3-4 years, that all of the job creation was coming in government jobs. So we need to change and flip that around. And by doing some of the things that Bessent's talking about, we can stimulate the private sector to get going and move a little faster. The other thing I loved is that, did you hear him say like 18 months ago when Trump asked me to consider being part of the cabinet, his question for him was, how do we not kill the economy while reducing the debt and the deficit? I told you yesterday, it's so fun for me to listen like the State of the Union or the whatever that was, the Congress speech the other night, and listen to Trump talking about debts and deficits, because nobody, even Republicans, have not talked about this. And people like me have been sitting here going, what are you doing, you people? So no question about it. Trump is talking all this talk about the debt and the deficit. He is serious about it. And that question there tells you that that he heard from Bessent. All right. Or the Bessent heard from Trump. 4:32. Steve Alstrom Show. Austin Erickson is here, and he is checking in from the Flag Family Newsroom, and he's got an update on some of the stories making headlines here on this Friday afternoon.
Yeah, definitely. A Grand Forks teen has been sentenced for the stabbing death of another man in March of last year. Our news partners at Valley News Live report Kazmir Haskins, who was 17 at the time of the murder, was sentenced to 40 years in prison.
I saw that.
For the stabbing that killed Anthony Economy during a fight outside of Grand Forks apartment complex. A video of the fight showed Haskins holding a knife. Haskins pled guilty to the crime in November.
40 years. The 17-year-old got 40
best
years.
Best years of his life.
That
so just
seems like a big punishment. I know it's a brutal murder. 40 years. I don't know. Maybe I'm not connecting it in my head. That seems like a big penalty for some of the other things where people get off in 10 years. I don't know. That to me seems interesting. So,
I wonder if the family thinks if that's a lot too much time.
Well,
not
that's
enough
a good
time.
Point, too. Yeah, that's a good point, too.
Speaking of a murder case, a West Fargo man convicted of killing his wife is appealing the sentence to the North Dakota Supreme Court. In December, Spencer Moen was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for the beating death of his wife, Sonia, who was left in a bathtub to die. The couple's two children were at home at the time. In court documents, Moen says there was insufficient evidence to sustain a conviction. and the state failed to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt, which I found interesting because they showed plenty of evidence during this trial. They showed his interview, they showed crime scene photos, and they showed how severely the jury said that he beat this woman. So, and they had the children testify. A difficult case in all counts.
I don't know how you get, like, how does that work? Is he paying for the attorney to file the appeal? I don't know how that part of it works, but
I wonder the same thing because you can't think.
Seems frivolous to me.
After the one case, unless he had a public defender, he probably paid a lot of money.
Wow. Anyway.
And also, this is important information for this weekend as we're seeing a warm-up. North Dakota Emergency Services officials say lower than average precipitation and above average temperatures are making it look like an earlier and longer spring fire season. National Weather Service Bismarck meteorologist Megan Jones says the lack of significant snowpack during the winter allows vegetation like grasses to remain standing, allowing them to burn easier. The Department of Emergency Service has been doing agency fire coordination meetings earlier than normal to make sure everyone is ready. Officials want to remind you to learn before you burn by checking ndresponse.gov/burn for fire danger information, possible burn restrictions and weather conditions. Make sure to keep your eyes on burn piles since they can reignite with high winds.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we could use some moisture. Sounds like we might get it next weekend. There's a system moving through. Apparently, it could be very interesting. So we'll see. Austin, thanks much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
have a great rest of the day. Austin Erickson checking in from the newsroom. Now let's send it over to the Skywatch Weather Center. Meteorologist Dean Wysocki has got the details on what looks like a pretty darn good weekend.
Steve, we're looking at some pretty decent weather heading our way for this upcoming weekend and into early next week. Hopefully everybody can get out and enjoy it. We got a few clouds around for the rest of the afternoon and evening with temperatures in the upper 30s to low 40s across the area. We'll bottom out tonight about in the mid-20s under partly cloudy skies. And then Saturday and Sunday look pretty mild. Upper 40s on Saturday with a northwest breeze about 10 to 25. More sunshine on Sunday. Southwest winds about 10 to 20, but highs in the upper 50s. And it looks like we will probably set a record on Monday. Right now, the current record stands at 58. I'm expecting temps close to 60 and then cooling down quickly on Tuesday into the mid-30s. Now, we're still keeping an eye on a potential major storm system for next weekend, for St. Paddy's Day weekend. There will be parts of the state that we're expecting blizzard conditions. Right now, it looks to be focused just to the west of the valley. But again, that's something that we will fine-tune as we head through next week. But next weekend, plan on some messy weather across much of the state.
All right. Thanks, Dean. When we come back on the program, beautiful inside and out. That's Bio Girls, and they are all about standing up for our young ladies. There's a lot going on in the world that our young ladies, our young women, and our girls are subjected to. A lot of stresses, frustrations, and struggles. This is a great organization. I like to have them on every once in a while to find out what they are up to. They've got a big event coming up soon. We're going to talk about that with Missy Heilman, who is the founder of Bio Girls, coming up next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. I suppose it was about 5 years ago that I was doing the Need to Know Morning Show here at the time, and I saw a survey come out about eighth grade girls across the state of North Dakota, and I was stunned at what I read. For the first time, I had seen these numbers talking about how many of our princesses, our daughters, our granddaughters, beautiful young lives and souls that had considered, and in some cases even made a plan to take their own life. And I said, you know what, we've got to talk about this more. And so I have looked for opportunities whenever I can along the way when it seems appropriate to just talk about this issue. This story, or this the show that we do here, we talk a lot about news and issues and what's in the news cycle today. But every once in a while, I think it's important for us to talk about big picture things in our community, what's happening. Because as I say on this show, we do life together. We're all trying to sort it out. And part of that is understanding what's happening in our community, especially with some of our most vulnerable populations. So you don't think of, pre-adolescent girls as a necessarily an at-risk population, but in many ways they are. And I've got a guest in studio here with me today who is an absolute rock star and pushing for awareness and progress in this whole thing. And it is Missy Heilman. She is the founder of Bio Girls. Beautiful inside and out. It's not a science club. It kind of sounds like it, but beautiful inside and out. And they've got an event coming up soon, and so we'll talk about that a little bit as well. But Missy, thank you for coming by. Great to see you again.
It's great to see you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So for those that aren't familiar, tell us about how this all started and how you decided to get involved and do something about this problem that you are seeing.
Sure. So as you said, BioGirl stands for Beautiful Inside and Out. Our mission is to improve the mental health of adolescent girls through empowerment of self and connection with others. I started the program in 2013 as a program at our church. I had no intention of it being a nonprofit organization serving thousands of girls each year. I just had a desire to give back as a mentor. I had amazing mentors in my life. Even though I grew up in a super supportive, loving home, these mentors made a difference for me, and I wanted to pay that forward. At the same time, I had two daughters, now three, and I became very sensitive to the messages that our society tells us as females, that we need to be, look, do, act differently than who we are. And seeing that through the lens of my two little girls, I knew I needed to take action. Now, of course, over the years, our mission has evolved. The program has remained the same, but our mission has evolved to encompass mental health in the struggles that girls face, especially coming out of the pandemic. And so that's where we're at today. We serve, this year we'll serve over 3,000 girls at 120 program locations. The majority of our impact continues to be across the state of North Dakota, Northwest Minnesota, but we also have programming in Iowa, Wisconsin, and South Dakota.
Wonderful. And you are, at least traditionally, it's kind of been that K through six, a girl's age group that you serve. Is that still kind of what your target is?
It's second through sixth grade. When I first started the program, it was first grade as well, because my daughter was actually a first grader. But we learned very quickly that they aren't quite mature enough and developed enough to really get something out of the program.
The statistics are just staggering, Missy, and I know you know them better than anybody, but the number I saw most recently, the 2023 Youth Risk Behavior Survey found that 1 in 6 North Dakota middle school girls has attempted suicide. 1 out of 6. So as I think about this, and the way I've told it to people before, my daughter, Natalie, when she was that age, she's older than that now, but get Natalie and five of her friends together in that group of six, one of them statistically, has not just thought about it, not made a plan, but actually tried to go through and do it. And I think it's statistics like that that make me realize that we have to keep talking about this. Why is it that, what are our girls facing? You talked about all those pressures. What specifically is it that our girls are really struggling with right now?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things, right? I think our society puts so much emphasis on achievement and winning and success that it's paralyzing our girls into thinking they're not enough. And the critic is often themselves. The critic is in their mind. And so oftentimes you don't see what they're feeling in the stories that they're telling themselves until it's too late, until they have an eating disorder, until they attempt to take their life. So that, I think there's isolation coming out of the pandemic, which you saw the rates of depression, anxiety, and other mental health disorders skyrocket.
With everybody, but certainly among our young people.
Yes. And, you know, so that isolation, and even though we're, quote unquote, back to normal now, some of the things that girls learned and internalized during that time still happen today. So they're not out socializing. And people are quick to point to social media as the reason why. And that's part of it. But I think it's just this comparison factor, this perfectionism tendency, this this thought that they're not enough unless they're achieving in the top of the podium. So there's so many reasons why, right? And BioGirls is really working to help girls understand that their true value comes from within and above and not from what everybody else thinks and says.
I love that you add that element to it, because those of us who are believers, we know that, you know, our identity is who we are in Christ. Mm-hmm. Although it's hard to go to a 10-year-old and communicate that, it's difficult for them to pick up on that. How do we as adults, parents, grandparents, even, you know, I like to think my daughter and her friends, who they're all, again, older now, but that we have an impact a little bit when we're sitting at our house having ice cream on a Friday night in the kitchen, you know, that there's something that we can do. How do we talk to our girls and let them know, hey, the movie stars, the entertainers, the Instagram models you see, like, those aren't real people. That's all airbrushed. Like, one out of a million people really looks like that. So don't, but how, it's easy for us to say, but how do we get through and really deliver those messages in a meaningful way where they will say, you know what? Natalie's dad says that I'm okay. How do we do that?
I think it starts with helping kids know that they matter and that they are unique and loved just the way that they are, that it does not, their success, their achievements, the things that they do not translate to love and value. It's truly who they are. And so if they feel that, they know that, they believe that, no matter what noise is happening on the outside, they'll be okay.
What kind of feedback do you get? I've got to think you have hundreds of I love you stories that have come your way based on what you have done. And those never get old, I'm sure. Tell us a little bit about some of the impacts that you've made.
Just recently, one of the programs, so historically our program has included physical activity, non-competitive, because youth sports is a soapbox of mine right now too. I won't get into that. Okay. But it's non-competitive. It's showing girls that moving their body is not just healthy for their for them physically, but also mentally,
100% right.
And that it's a lifelong thing. It doesn't have to be running. That's what we've done traditionally with BioGirls, because the barrier to entry is very low. But we've now expanded with yoga, cross training. In Fargo, we have self-defense, cheer, dance. And then this last year, we introduced art programming. So we've replaced the physical activity with creative arts. And a story that came out of our art program just a few weeks ago was a young girl who participated for the first time in BioGirls, and she said, I finally found the place where I belong. And, you know, that's what it's all about, is about that connection, that belonging, feeling like you belong. And that is so powerful for our girls.
And that might be all it takes for a young woman who's struggling and where am I? Where are my people? I don't fit in. I don't. That might be enough, right, to make the difference in that choice that she may have considered otherwise. You've got an event coming up here in May, and I want to let people know about this, because there's opportunities to get involved and help out here. And sometimes you hear about something, oh, it's tomorrow. Oh, shoot. Well, here you've got something coming up that is going to be happening in May, and you're partnering with Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Dakota. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we're so grateful to Blue Cross Blue Shield and the Caring Foundation for supporting our annual 5K Find Your Kind run or walk if you're not a runner. This event, if you've never been, it is so full of energy and very exciting, because it serves as the finale event for all of our local programs that include running as the physical activity. There is no time clock, so it's a little bit different than other 5Ks that you could participate in, because again, it's not about the place or the time. It's about progress, achieving a goal, and crossing that finish line, which we often say it's the finish line at the race, but the start of something bigger, because it's a big accomplishment for these girls. It's open to the public. So if you are a runner or a walker, or maybe you have never done a 5K before, it's a great opportunity to do that, because you're surrounded by hundreds of bio girls and their mentors. And you will never experience anything like it. The energy, like I said, is so high. And we've gotten feedback from other community members that have participated in the past saying, I had tears in my eyes watching these young girls accomplish their goals.
You're so right. If you're feeling down about things, volunteer, give some time, exercise, all these things. It just lowers the temperature in that mind space sometimes. If you want to find out more about the organization, biogirls.org, just like it sounds, biogirls.org. And if you want to find out about the 5K race, biogirls.org/5K. Missy, thanks for coming by. God bless you for doing what you're doing. You're the hands and feet of Jesus to these girls. Mm-hmm. And we need you to keep doing it. So thanks so much for giving us updates from time to time. And thanks for the continued great work you and your team do.
Appreciate the support, Steve.
All right. When we come back here on the Steve Alstrom Show, speaking of girls rocking it and getting the job done, the wrestling manager stunned the Fargo Dome crowd with the best national anthem you've heard in a long time. We're going to play that for you coming up next. Well, at the North Dakota State Wrestling Championships last weekend, there was an unexpected virtuoso performance that had nothing to do with what was happening on the wrestling mat. It was one of the student managers for the Fargo South wrestling team. Her name is Lily Held. She is 17 years old. She's a junior at South High. Goes by the name Lily Danielle. That's her stage name, and she's got to have a stage name because she is good. She is really, really good. And what happened was they said, all right, we're going to have the national anthem. Everybody said, okay, whatever. And out walks Lily to sing the national anthem, and this is the performance that everybody who was at that tournament has been talking about ever since. Here's a little bit how it sounded. It's not perfect audio, but you'll be able to tell that this girl is special.
Oh, say can you see another was so bright.
How about that? Is that any good or what? Nobody was expecting that when the wrestling manager came out to sing the national anthem. So good. What a great performance that was. The video has been posted. You can find it a number of different places, different social media platforms. You can search for Lily Held, H-E-L-D, or Lily Danielle is her stage name, D-A-N-I-E-L-L-E. Fantastic. Or just search wrestling North Dakota national anthem. But what an unexpected surprise. But man, is that girl talented. Holy smoke. Sounds like she is ready for Broadway. Hour number two, the Steve Alstrom Show, coming up next. The Steve Alstrom Studio is built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it and go to PCCND.com to learn more. Coming up in this hour of the program, Julie Fedorchuk, North Dakota's congresswoman, joins us from the southern border. She's been down there talking to Border Patrol, surveying the situation, seeing what things are like, and she's going to give us a call here in a few minutes. Says she told me earlier today that she's learned a few things being down there, and we'll visit with her about that today. And then at 5:35, Raheem Williams will be with us, and he is an economist and researcher. We're going to talk about the jobs report today and get into some of the minutia of what we're seeing with the job creation across the country, how it is changing. Big difference between what we saw in the last 4 years to what we're seeing now. And I'm going to ask Raheem a little bit about his thoughts on the Trump tariff program and what he thinks that might do to the pace of economic activity here in our country. Depending on who you listen to, the country is either going to come out of this in an absolute next great leg up for America, or the whole thing's going to turn into a dumpster fire. So we'll see where Raheem sits on that here before we finish up today. So lots of ground to cover here in the 5 o'clock hour of the show. We're going to start with the 5 o'clock or the top five and five. And these are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call it the top five at five. It's brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty. Go to Nancy Kelly Realty and find out more about Colfax Meadows, where small town living is still a thing. Before I get to the stories of the day, real quick, I want to mention that the Lakeville South hockey team that Moorhead beat last night came back in the consolation round today and thoroughly beat a very good Rogers team 7-4. A lot of people thought Rogers might make a run and could win this whole thing, but Lakeville South won that game 7-4. This after the Spuds beat them 7-4 last night. They'll play Shakopee for the consolation title. 5-2, Shakopee beat Andover today. In the Class A semifinals this afternoon down in St. Paul, East Grand Forks came from, I think it was 4-1 that they trailed Hibbing, the top seed in the tournament, and East Grand Forks went on to win it by a score of 7-5. They finished with a flurry. They'll take on defending champ St. Cloud Cathedral, who had no trouble with Orono today by a score of 4-1. Tonight, we've got the two semifinals that are going to be absolutely fantastic. It's going to be Stillwater and St. Thomas Academy at 6 o'clock, and then Moorhead and Edina, probably about 8:30 or so by the time that one gets going. If you want to listen to that, we'll be doing our coverage over on WDAY, pregame show at 8, and then the call of the game at 8:30 or so. All right, here are the five biggest stories of the day. I put this number one because it really does point to the mindset of the Republican Party in the state of North Dakota, and specifically in the metro area, what they did to replace the late Josh Boshi, who passed away last month at the age of 43, way too soon. A very sad story there, but the show must go on. And so the District 27 Republican Party has chosen Timothy Brown Jr., to succeed Josh Christie. So he'll get to Bismarck and fill in here fairly quickly. And from what I see here, it looks like Mr. Brown, he goes by TJ Brown, looks like our kind of guy here. He is a former Army medic, now serves in law enforcement, runs the virtual shooting range called The Range, and also has a podcast and owns a firearms training company called Tea Party Solutions. So, sounds pretty good to me. So, congratulations to TJ, and we hope that things go very well for him at the legislature. We'll try to get him on next week and get to know him a little bit. A second story I have in the rundown today is something I have to put in, just because this is one of the more horrific stories that has happened in the last 5 years in our community. And anytime there's a development, one of the more horrific stories, it seems like it just captures all of our attention. And this one certainly did when I saw it today. Spencer Moen is appealing his sentence to the North Dakota Supreme Court. In December, Moen was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. This coming after he beat his wife to death and left her in a bathtub to die. But according to documents filed with the North Dakota Supreme Court, Moen says there was insufficient evidence to sustain a conviction, and further went on to say that the state failed to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. Look, I'm always going to say the same thing on these. If someone is innocent, we need to be respectful of that until guilty, innocent is determined. At that point, you sort of have some conviction for what you want to say, and this is one of the most gruesome cases. Basically beat this woman to death in front of little kids, and it's just one that offends our decency here. I don't know how this guy is able to continue to appeal this. I don't know if he's just got that much money and he can afford to hire legal representation, but I know that in the court of law, if you can't afford an attorney, one gets appointed to you through the judicial process. But I would think if you're talking about appeals, that's no longer something that the state will pay for. And so you've got to put that conviction on your own. So maybe he's just got the money to do it. But this is one of those cases where you felt like probably pretty open and shut. I'm surprised to see this being appealed, but We'll wait to see what happens there. Nearly 200 employees with hourly positions at Fargo's Case IH facility are going to see their jobs come to an end, reports WDAY Radio, and this is story number three. This after the parent company CNH Industrial announced workforce reductions. The company says current and anticipated market conditions are the reason for the workforce reductions. They don't feel like they're going to sell many tractors, I guess, coming up soon. In the state legislature today, story number four, KFYR-TV reports that the state house has voted down a bill that would raise the minimum wage from $7.25 to $9.25. It wasn't close, $79 to $11. And the North Dakota minimum wage mirrors the federal minimum wage at $7.25. So a state representative said, nope, this is not what we want to do here. And finally, U.S. payroll growth totaled 151,000 in February, less than expected, which, you know, I don't really care about what was expected. I want to see the trend. And the trend is actually good, even though we have basically all the people that are losing their jobs in the federal government. But the revised number for January is 125,000 jobs created. And that, I told you, is kind of the last Joe Biden report. Now we get February, and some of this gets hung on President Trump. Even though he has only been in office for a short amount of time, you can make a difference in a short amount of time, and I believe that he has. Now, it's not all bad news if you think that the number of jobs being created in government should be way slower and lower than it is. So what they said today was that federal government employment declined by 10,000 in February, although government payrolls overall rose by 11,000. So that means at the state level, county, city level, we still love to hire government employees. We just can't stop hiring government employees. But at the federal level, they don't really do that anymore. Average hourly earnings climbed 0.3% for the month. So annualized, that's 3.6. And that's probably about where it's been. The annual increase was 4%, so even that pace of average hourly earnings is slowing somewhat. And those, friends, are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. There's all kinds of little footnotes that I could talk to you about in this. I will throw this one out to you. There is another jobs number that comes out. The household survey, which Bureau of Labor Stats uses to calculate its unemployment rate, and that showed that across the country, 588,000 people lost their job in February. And the number of people holding part-time jobs but wanting full-time positions increased to 4.9 million. It was about 4.2 million before. So people want to work. It's just the jobs are not out there like they used to be. So you can draw your own conclusions from there, but that's what the numbers tell us today. All right, 517 here on the Steve Alstrom Show. When we come back, we're going to go live to the U.S. border with Mexico, where Julie Fedorchuk, our congresswoman from the state of North Dakota, has been learning, taking in all the information and perspective, and she'll tell us what she's been learning down there when we come back on the Steve Alstrom Show. One of the many new faces in Washington, D.C. is Julie Fedorchuk, North Dakota's congresswoman who won election this past November, and she's been spending quite a bit of time in Washington, D.C. in her first days on the job as a House of Representatives member, but this week she is traveling down to the southern border with Mexico, and she's been kind enough to join us here today on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Good afternoon, Julie. How are you?
Good afternoon, Steve. Thank you for the opportunity to visit with you today.
Well, thank you for reaching out. I was actually thinking earlier this week, I've got to get Julie on the show here sometime soon to find out how things are going now for you out in D.C., and then your press secretary reached out earlier today and said, hey, there's an opportunity. So I'm so thrilled that this worked out, and I really appreciate you taking time. I understand it's been a busy day. So tell us a little bit before I get to overall how everything is going in D.C. Tell us what you've been learning so far down at the border.
Well, it's been a fascinating trip. We started out, it's being sponsored by one of my colleagues, Representative Juan Siscomani. This is his district right here on the border between Tucson, Arizona, south of Tucson, and Mexico. And we started the day visiting with sheriffs and community members to learn about the impact that the border crisis has had on their communities, being flooded with people, flooded with crime, flooded with fentanyl, really got their perspective. And basically they said, we were left alone. We were abandoned by the federal government. They did nothing. We had to do everything ourselves for the last 4 years. So then we took that and went to the border crossing itself and the port and visited about trade and learned that perspective. You know, there's a lot of trade that goes back and forth at this border crossing to legal trade. It's the largest port of entry for fruits and vegetables that we all enjoy. It's also the most, it's the capital of where they seize the most fentanyl, this border crossing. So those border agents who are monitoring the shipments back and forth have a hard job to do, but they use dogs. They really high-tech equipment that can scan every single truck that comes through and really have great ways of being able to identify illicit drugs, et cetera, even in trains and in semis, et cetera. So that was great to see how they're really hard at work trying to make sure that the products that get across are safe. And then we went to the border itself, saw the wall, talked to the border agents there, went to a processing facility. It was really interesting because the processing facility was empty. The agents there said a year ago, that room that we were in that was empty would have had probably 1,400 people in it.
Wow.
Yes, 1,400 just, you know, wall-to-wall people. And so all of the Border Patrol agents were focused on processing the people that were had flooded into our country. None of them, virtually none of them, were on the border protecting the border or doing their jobs of protecting the border. So it just exacerbated the problem because there was no deterrence. There was nothing to stop people from coming in because all the border agents were busy processing people. 300,000 people they had enter at this point last year, 300,000 from January 1st to today. This year, there's 33,000. So, I mean, it's just a significant drop in the number of people. And they said this is because of the consequences. They know there's consequences now. They're going to be turned back. And that is a huge, huge deterrent for people coming across the border. So now they can actually do their job and do their work and help protect the border and help prevent the trafficking of people, help prevent the trafficking of fentanyl and all the terrible things that come with that. And now, right now, I'm at the ICE facility and learning about what their role is in this, all of this is. And they're really investigating the transnational criminal organizations that are behind all of this. They're behind the human trafficking. They're the organizations that are, you know, they're the puppet masters. They're smuggling the drugs and organizing all the cartels and behind all of this illicit activity. So ICE is working at trying to, you know, have undercover agents, cooperating sources, folks to get into those organizations and try to dismantle them from within. So it's, you know, really great to be here on the ground and seeing all the different components of this big, huge, massive problem that we have to get on top of. I think we're making progress, but we're in Congress going to be making decisions in terms of resources that are needed to help support this work. People, equipment, more walls, you know, more technology, more dogs, you know, all the resources that are needed to do the job well. And it's really helpful to be able to see it on the ground and talk to the people on the front lines doing the work to get a better appreciation for it.
Julie, how quickly can we get legislation done now that we we have control of the House and the Senate and the presidency? How fast can we get legislation going to resume building that wall and finish that job that is so important to us?
Well, we're working on that. That will be included in this budget reconciliation process. That process is available when you have the trifecta where you have control of the White House, the House, and the Senate, which we do, and it circumvents the Senate 60-vote threshold. So we can get anything we can get into the reconciliation package. And there's rules for what can and cannot be included, but we've got a package of border funding that we intend to include in that. If we didn't have that tool, you'd be subject to the 60-vote threshold in the Senate, and the Democrats just haven't been willing to support this kind of these kind of investments and resources in the past. Maybe they've learned, maybe they'd be on board, maybe you could get seven Democrats to vote with it, but outside of that budget reconciliation process, it'd be a much steeper it'd be a much steeper task. So yeah. Hopefully within the next couple of months we can get that whole process completed and finalized and signed into law. And then, you know, those agencies can be off and running. Yeah. Then we can get back to the regular work of getting, you know, normal. I'm very optimistic that we can get, for the first time since 1987, an order, regular order budget process where we pass all the budgets through, all 12 budgets through, and don't have to use this continuing resolution process that has plagued our Congress and the presidency for so long.
Yes, love it. What's been the biggest learning curve for you being out there now these first couple of months?
Probably learning people's names and remembering them.
Yeah, I believe it.
You know, the key to this job, like, I love the policy. I love the actual learning and the work. And I was very accustomed to working on highly technical things with my past experience on the Public Service Commission. So there's just more more issues that you have to dig into and really try to understand, and not enough time to do all that. So building the relationships with people who can help you, you know, leverage your time and leverage your expertise, and you can lean on them for their expertise and really be as effective as possible in the shortest amount of time. That requires building those relationships and remembering all the names. And, yeah. You know, so that for me has been, you know, probably, you know, the biggest challenge. It's not like a technical challenge. It's just, you know, the magnitude of folks all at once is a lot.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, let's do this again soon when we have a little more time. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, a balanced budget and the DOGE work that's going on. I think it's absolutely fascinating to those of us who have been calling for better fiscal responsibility in Washington, D.C. So there's a lot of good things
on
there.
So. Yes.
Yeah, so let's do
met
this.
Met with Elon Musk this week, too.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I'd love to visit with you about that.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much going on.
I bet. Well,
it's exciting.
Let's get that set up so we can do it again. But on short notice, we want to make sure to get you in today because it sounds like there's some really interesting things that are happening. I love those numbers, 300,000 to 33,000 crossings.
Yep.
That's an amazing number. And thank goodness that it's happening. Julie, thanks a lot for the time. We appreciate it. Have a great rest of the day. Great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks again. Yep, Julie Fedorchuk, the lone congressional representative, I guess we could say it that way, for the House of Representatives out of the state of North Dakota. When we come back here on the program, got a check of news and weather for you. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about some of these labor numbers. One set of numbers comes out, and then another set of numbers comes out later, and they are very different. Which one should we put our faith in? We're going to talk to Raheem Williams, who's one of the great guests we have on to talk about economy and jobs numbers, inflation, and things like that. And we will do that when we return to the Steve Hallstrom Show. All right, so people move around in the job market. We know that. And every company can have a different policy or different type of benefit structure with life insurance. You want to make sure you have a life insurance policy, though, that's locked in for a while, because work policies can come and go. They can go away overnight if your company goes through a hard time, a change of benefits. Maybe you'll lose your job. Work at a different place that doesn't have quite as good of benefits. Well, DJ Coulter and the American Family Insurance team would love to visit with you. You can get a lot of life insurance for a very small amount of money, and they'll coach you through the whole thing. 701-236-6641. 235-6641. DJ Coulter, American Family Insurance. All right, when things get crazy in the stock market with the economy, I love to give a call to my friend Raheem Williams. And he and I can talk through some things, and I always learn a little something whenever he comes on the show. Raheem, great to visit with you again. Great to see you, my friend. How you been?
I've been good. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Yeah, well, thanks for making a few minutes for us here. Okay, so let's talk about this jobs report that came out today. The first thing I have to ask you is, which jobs report do you put more stock in, the non-farm payrolls report that came out today or the other report, the household survey, because they show some different pictures and really this is nothing new. They kind of have for quite some time. Where do you put the stock in on these two reports?
Well, generally, I hang out with the employment situation of BLS, so the non-farm payroll is just the one that I'm most comfortable with. What the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics do in terms of an employment payroll, they just basically ask employers what they're thinking, which is distinctively different, or what they're thinking and what they're doing, and which is distinctively different from what you might get with households. They generally shouldn't be far off in terms of trend analysis. But they are composed of different methods, and that's why you generally get different numbers.
Yeah, the household survey showed a plunge of about 590,000 workers across the country. Meanwhile, the BLS jobs report shows that we added 151,000 jobs. So I guess somewhere in between, maybe the truth lies. I'll stay with you on this one to talk about the report that most people focus on, and that is 151,000 jobs up from 125,000, which was the revised January number. So it's hard to get real excited about a number that goes up when you're going from 125 to 151, when some of the past increases have been higher than that. But Raheem, I have to tell you, maybe I'm the only guy in the room, but I take a look at where these jobs came from, and I actually think it's better than some of those Biden-era jobs reports that showed 250,000, 300,000, because manufacturing and construction jobs were up, federal government jobs were down, and it seems like even though we didn't have as many, the percentage of jobs and where that kind of report is constituted from seems to look better to me if you dig into the details. How about you?
Well, I mean, this is a great debate in economics. I'm going to be cautious and say a job's a job, right? I'm far from the biggest fan of government, and I'm not a big fan of government agencies. But at the end of the day, it's a necessary evil. So I'm a shy away from the debate on how many government workers should we employ or not.
Interesting. Yeah, I get it. Those aren't organic private sector jobs that are being created. You and I pay for those government jobs, though.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I don't want to be pro or con. I'm just saying that it's a very interesting thought experiment.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I do tend to take the view that government jobs aren't necessarily conductive to growth and long-term economic growth because government is not a producer of wealth.
Yes.
That tends to be my view. Some people will push back on that, and I don't think they have strong footing to stand on.
Yeah.
So let's dig a little bit into these numbers.
Yeah, what else do you see?
The first glance, top economic number, we have to see if it holds, right? We got to see. It could be revised up. It could be revised down next month. Yep. So those are typically one of those things that I look out for. It's higher than last month. They say coming in under expectations. So you can see different people with different political spins trying to, you know, spin it the way they want. But these are pretty meh numbers. Hmm. Now, on the political side, it's just early. Is like there's no impacts from any kind of tariff policy, trade policy, any kind of, you know, fundamental change in energy policy. All of these things are decision lags and they're policy lags. It's like you come up with what you're going to do and it takes a while to manifest in the data. So none of that stuff's going to be instant. So this is more or less a continuation of what we saw last month, which is very meh. Not stunningly great, not terrible. Something that I do think is a bit interesting and something I would keep an eye on is that the unemployment rate has been ticking up pretty consistently since 2023. May of 2023, it was about 3.4%, and now we're at 4.1%. Cause for concern. 4.1 is still very low. But what's not in this report is something else that I read it's not just enough to look at the jobs numbers. You got to see how people are doing. in this report, what stuck out to me, and this tends to speak to the poorest amongst us, those who are struggling to pay their bills, part-time for economic reasons increased by 460,000. Mm. And that is also on par with something we're seeing. We're seeing auto loans default at a high record pace, and it's particularly subprime auto loans are skyrocketing. I'm not sure if you recall a few years back, there was a chip shortage that spiked the cost of used cars.
Right.
And you're starting to see people on the bottom rung are definitely in the struggle bus. And the reason I think people should care about this is because these type of things get infectious really quick. It could be sometimes top down when you see big money players that are pulling out their investments, but it can also be bottom up, where you see the impacts of cracks in the economy are going to start to stress the poorest amongst us first.
Yeah.
Either which way, it could spread to the middle class. There's no rule that says it stops there. So those are fracture points that if I was in the White House, I would be taking a good look at it and I'd be concerned about.
Yeah, they say that the newest shopping contingent at Walmart these days is people that are making $100,000 or more, because they are feeling the pinch too. So it speaks to exactly what you were talking about. It can't just be a tale of two cities. You're going to have some carryover from one group to another at some point. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I saw that note too. And there's no question about it. The lowest rung on the economic ladder is really struggling right now, and the people on the higher end seem to be doing fairly well. How much longer that lasts, we don't know. I am glad to hear you talk about the unemployment rate today, because it was my sort of suspicion when the markets rallied at the news of these numbers. The futures market rallied 7:30 this morning Central Time when those numbers hit. The market took off and went, and we finished to the upside on pretty much all the indices today. And the only explanation I can think of, and I have to say that I give credit to Maria Bartiromo for pointing this out, because I wouldn't have thought of it, but she said, I think that the markets are rallying because that unemployment rate at 4.1, traders believe that's going to cause the Federal Reserve to make a rate cut sometime here in the not too distant future. I thought that was an interesting theory. What do you think about that?
First impression, I don't believe it. Here's why I don't believe that. And I mean, maybe that's why the market rallied. My view is that the market rallied because it wasn't bad news. Usually you get a bump anytime the employment report isn't bad, and it's not bad. Yeah. You only get a sell off when it's bad.
Yeah. Well, the way people were talking about it, you'd have thought, like, you know, we've got a dumpster fire and we're about to throw a big vat of motor oil in there, because people, oh, the tariffs. And so I think people were starting to think that this is going to be horrible what we see. And really, like you said earlier, we just aren't far enough down the path to really have any of these current policies make a big difference. So I'm with you on that. Well,
I think the Fed is going to be watching the tariffs and the inflation number. If you want to see anything that impacts my rate cut guidance, it's not going to be this particular employment report, because again, it's just not dramatic enough to make me either hold steady, cut, or raise. It's like, if I was the Fed, I'd be like, meh. But those inflation rates and that tariff situation is something I'd be looking a lot more closely at, in lieu of something, a bomb in a future employment report. And that could come. Again, like if you go back to, you know, November 2007, December 2007, January 2008, you went from 150,000 jobs, 150,000 to negative 400,000. It happens quick,
yep,
right?
Yep.
So it can turn on a dime in the data. So it's like there could be a bomb in the next report, or there could be something that, or the inflation rate could be a lot lower than people expect, which I don't think is outside of the question, mostly because we've seen energy prices declining. The price per barrel of oil has been tanking, and that energy is the biggest in terms of outside of core inflation. We're talking regular CPIU. Those energy price swings have a huge effect. So there's a world where we
absolutely
wake up in that inflation or that it's lower than expected, and that might have some impact on where the Fed does. But I think they're watching for that inflation rate, core inflation, core CPIU, and they're looking at that the tariff situation. And when they're talking about rate hikes, I just couldn't see this changing my mind if I was on the Board of Governors in either which way.
I've got a theory that's been rolling around in my mind. I want to throw it by you because I know that you'll be willing to tell me what I need to hear on this. But I've been wondering why Donald Trump didn't do the rate cuts and try to get that done first before he did the tariffs, to give a little bit of, you know, mojo, put some wind at the back, a gas in the tank or whatever, and then go with the tariffs. But I think what I've come to believe on this is that he probably needs to do the tariffs right away, because think about it, a year from now, we're kind of, you know, in the on deck circle for the midterm elections already, and people are going to start to judge this economy by what happens in this first year. And I think Trump needs to give these tariffs, if he is intending to follow through with them, which we still don't really know, but if he is intending to do this, it's going to take a little while for the shock to wear off and the impact to really hit our economy. And I think he maybe feels like he has to do it now because he can't wait very long to let this play out to see some benefit before we get into the 2026 midterms. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's a decent amount of separation between the president and the Fed chair, so I'm not quite sure he could just get the rate cut he wants, even if he wanted it. But I would also, I'm not entirely sure a rate cut would be beneficial. If tariffs are inflationary, which I do believe they are, I just don't believe that's the only part of the inflation calculus.
Right.
Having higher rates could be offsetting. I think having rates where they are, in addition to falling energy prices, could be very offsetting to any potential tariffs. So all the people that are screaming doom and gloom on the tariffs and the tariff war, I sympathize with their concerns. I agree with their concerns. But at the end of the day, if energy prices continue to fall and these rates hold high, those would be very offsetting from an inflationary standpoint. And that means you might not get the inflation picture that you were looking for. And to support this, I would say, go back to 2017, go back to 2018, go back to 2019. Trump was raising tariffs on goods and things of that nature, and we didn't really see any inflation at all.
That's right.
The Biden CARES Act, the market. So it's like there's a lot of things happening in the macro economy that could be offsetting, and they could also exacerbate issues. Like you can have the summer travel season come here and a spike. A geopolitical situation causes a spike in oil prices that can make inflation worse. So it's like you don't necessarily know how this story ends. And I'm humble enough to admit that, but some people are a little more big headed than I am.
Yeah, well, how many of us have been wrong about something or another? Because what's happened in the last 5 years has not followed the playbook and the textbooks that we know from years past. And I think all of this government spending has just been a wild card that none of us have really known how to process. We've never had trillions of dollars pumped into the economy. It just completely changes the game. So it's just been a different game than anybody has really ever seen before. Raheem, before I let you go, any last thoughts you want to leave on what you saw in the job numbers today, or where you see the economy, the jobs picture, inflation, tariffs, anything like that that have been kind of running around in your mind that you want to give us a little bit of feel for before we finish up today?
As far as the economy, I think we're all in wait and see. I think there's a lot of doom narrative right now. There's been a few studies on this that our biased media presents economic pictures a lot more differently when there's a certain party
no
in charge.
No kidding.
So I think a lot of people might find themselves eating crow if they're not careful, because they're staking their reputations very hard on an inflation spike that might not materialize. So I'd be careful with that. And it may. I'm just saying that their micro factors are a lot more complex than simply what dairy tariffs from Canada are.
Yeah, no question. Hey, quick question before I let you go. Are you into Bitcoin? Are you in the cryptos right now? I'm kind of tempted. I'm scared because I don't really know what it's all about. But I'm hearing from more and more really smart, really wealthy people that say I'm all about it. Are you a believer in the Bitcoin?
I do not invest in crypto. I only hang out in asset spaces that I understand well.
Well said. I don't understand.
That's no disrespect to those.
No, I get
no
it.
No disrespect to those.
Yeah, I get it. I I haven't pulled the trigger yet either. I don't know. My gut tells me there's something and this is going to take off. And with Trump starting this strategic reserve, I feel like there's going to be a supply demand thing going on here at some point, but we'll have to see. If you get bold enough to get into it, give me a call first. Okay.
I will. I'm more than willing to share with your viewers, my views, or your listeners and my views on crypto, but it's going to take a lot more time than we have right now.
Yeah, I got you completely. All right, Raheem, hey, I appreciate you spending some time with me. It's always great to catch up with you. You have a great weekend there, and the best to you and your family, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Steve. God bless.
Take care. You too. Raheem Williams, one of the more entertaining and fun guests for me to talk about here. We get to geek out a little bit on economic news every once in a while. All right, short break. When we come back, it's been a tough day for Bison basketball in Sioux Falls already, and some bad news already. The Bison men haven't even tipped off in their game tonight, and already I'm seeing a couple of bad injury pieces of news. We got to talk about that when we come back on the Steve Alstrom Show. Don't go away. The North Dakota State women's basketball team is out. They lost today. They were upset in the first round of the Summit League tournament in Sioux Falls. And they were the 3 seed in the tournament, so a lot of people thought they had a chance to make it to the championship game, but they lose today by a score of 68-58 to the 6-seeded Kansas City team. Bison got outscored in the first half 39-18 and could not catch up, so they end the year at 19-11. Kansas City was only 11-20 coming in, so the Bison are out. And then I see the note a few minutes ago that Jackson Mone and Jakari White will not play tonight for the Bison men's team. Bison and South Dakota will square off tonight in the 4-5 matchup there. Jackson Mone, the Cheyenne kid, transferred in from Northern State, and he has been fantastic. Summit League's leading scorer in the regular season, so he's got a wrist injury. Apparently, Jakari White, who's one of their sharpshooters, he's not going to play tonight. He's got a hand injury, too, so this is not shaping up to be a good day. I bet Coach Richmond has them ready to go, though. I bet they can get her done. But they're going to be short a couple of players that are very important to them. All right, my friend. Well, that'll do it for the show today. Thank you very much for being with me today. Fun show, busy Friday show, but that's all good. Hope you have a great weekend, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.